verse 22.
يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ عُبُدُوا رَبَّكُمُ الَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ وَالَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِكُمْ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَّقُونَ.
O ye men, worship your Lord, who created you and those who were before you, that you may guard against evil. Footnote 42. This verse contains the first commandment of God given in the Quran. As the words show, the commandment is addressed to all mankind and not to Arabs only, which indicates that Islam, from the very beginning, claimed to be a universal religion. It abolished the ideal of national religion and conceived mankind as one brotherhood.
Verse 23.
الَّذِي جَعَلَ لَكُمُ الْأَرْضَ فِرَاشًا وَالسَّمَاءَ بِنَاءً وَأَنزَلَ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ مَاءً وَأَنزَلَ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ مَاءً فَأَخْرَجَ بِهِ مِنَ الثَّمَرَاتِ رِزْقًا لَكُمْ فَلَا تَجْعَلُوا لِلَّهِ أَنْدَادًا وَأَنْتُمْ تَعْلَمُونَ.
Who made the earth a bed for you, and the heaven a roof, and caused water to come down from the clouds, and therewith brought forth fruits for your sustenance. So do not set up equals to Allah while you know. Footnote 43. The expression suggests that just as a building or a roof is a means of protection for those living in or under it, similarly, the remoter parts of the universe serve as a protection for our planet, Earth. And those who have studied the science of the stars, the clouds, and other atmospheric phenomena know how the other heavenly bodies, running their courses through the boundless expanse, rising high above the Earth on all sides, make for its safety and stability. It is also hinted here that the perfection of the material world depends upon the coordination between earthly and heavenly forces.
Verse 24.
وَإِن كُنتُمْ فِي رَيْبٍ مِمَّا نَزَّلْنَا عَلَىٰ عَبْدِنَا فَأْتُوا بِسُورَةٍ مِّن مِثْلِهِ فَأْتُوا بِسُورَةٍ مِّن مِثْلِهِ وَدَعُوا شُهَدَاءَكُم مِّن دُونِ اللَّهِ إِن كُنتُمْ صَادِقِينَ.
And if you are in doubt as to what we have sent down to our servant, then produce a chapter like it, and call upon your helpers beside Allah, if you are truthful. Footnote 44. The subject of the incomparable excellence of the Quran has been dealt with at five different places, i.e. in chapter 2, verse 24, chapter 10, verse 39, chapter 11, verse 14, chapter 17, verse 89, and chapter 52, verses 34 and 35. In two of these five verses, chapter 2, verse 24, and chapter 10, verse 39, the challenge is identical, while in the remaining three verses, three separate and different demands have been made from disbelievers. At first sight, this difference in the form of the challenge at different places seems to be incongruous, but it is not so. In fact, these verses contain certain demands which stand for all time. The challenge is open even today in all the different forms mentioned in the Quran, as it was in the time of the Holy Prophet. Before explaining the various forms of these challenges, it is worth noting that their mention in the Quran is invariably accompanied by a reference to wealth and power, except in the present verse, which, as already stated, does not contain a new challenge, but only repeats the challenge made in chapter 10, verse 39. From this, it may be safely concluded that there exists a close connection between the question of wealth and power and the challenge for the production of the like of the Quran or a part thereof. This connection lies in the fact that the Quran has been held out to disbelievers as a priceless treasure. When disbelievers demanded material treasures from the Holy Prophet, chapter 11, verse 13, they were told that he possessed a matchless treasure in the form of the Quran. And when they asked, "Wherefore has not an angel come with him?" Chapter 11, verse 13, they were told in reply that angels did not descend upon him, for their function was to bring the word of God, and the divine word had already been vouchsafed to him. Thus both the demands for a treasure and for the descent of angels have been jointly met by the Quran, which is a matchless treasure brought down by angels, and the challenge to produce its like has been put forward as a proof of its peerless quality. Now, take the different verses containing this challenge separately. The greatest demand is made in chapter 17, verse 89, where disbelievers are required to bring a book like the whole of the Quran, with all its manifold qualities. In that verse, disbelievers are not required to represent their composition as the word of God. They may bring it forward as their own composition and declare it to be the equal of, or for that matter, better than the Quran. But as at the time when this challenge was made, the whole of the Quran had not yet been revealed, the disbelievers were not required to produce the like of the Quran then and there. And the challenge thus implied a prophecy that they would never be able to produce the like of it, neither in the form in which it then was, nor when it became complete. Again, the challenge was not confined to the disbelievers of the Prophet's time alone, but extended to doubters and critics of all time. The reason why the disbelievers in chapter 11, verse 14, have been called upon to produce 10 surahs and not the whole of the Quran is that the question in that verse did not relate to the perfection of the whole of the Quran in all respects, but to that of only a portion of it. The disbelievers had objected to some parts of it being defective. Hence, they were not required to bring a complete book like the whole of the Quran, but only 10 surahs in place of those parts of the Quran which they deemed to be defective, in order that the truth of their assertion might be tested. As for the selection of the specific number 10 for this purpose, it may be noted that since in chapter 17, verse 89, the whole of the Quran was claimed to be a perfect book, its opponents were called upon to produce the like of the whole of it. But as in chapter 11, verse 14, the point was that certain portions of it were objected to, so they were asked to choose 10 such portions as appeared to them to be most effective, and then produce a composition even like those portions. In chapter 10, verse 39, disbelievers were called upon to produce the like of only one surah of the Quran. This is because, unlike the above-mentioned two verses, the challenge in that verse was in support of a claim made by the Quran itself, and not in refutation of any objection of the disbelievers. In chapter 10, verse 38, the Quran claimed to possess 5 very prominent qualities. In support of this claim, chapter 10, verse 39 throws out a challenge to those who deny or doubt it to produce a single surah containing these qualities in the same perfect form in which they are contained in the 10th surah. The 5th challenge to produce the like of the Quran is contained in the verse under comment chapter 2, verse 24, and here also, as is in chapter 10, verse 39, disbelievers have been called upon to bring forward a single surah like that of the Quran. This challenge is preceded by the claim that the Quran guides the righteous to the highest stages of spiritual progress. The disbelievers are told that if they are in doubt about the divine origin of the Quran, then they should bring forward a single surah that may be comparable to it in the spiritual influence it exercises over its followers. See also the larger edition of the commentary, pages 58 to 62. The above explanation will show that all these challenges calling upon disbelievers to produce the like of the Quran are quite distinct and separate one from the other. And all of them stand for all time, none of them superseding or cancelling the other. But as the Quran comprises sublime and lofty ideas, it was inevitable that a most beautiful diction and the chastest style should have been employed as the vehicle for the expression of those ideas. Otherwise, the subject matter was liable to remain obscure and doubtful, and the perfect beauty of the Quran would have been marred. Thus, in whatever form and in whatever respect disbelievers have been challenged to produce a composition like the Quran, the demand for beauty of style and elegance of diction comparable to that of the Quran also forms a part of the challenge.
Verse 25.
But if you do it not, and never shall you do it, then guard against the fire, whose fuel is men and stones, which is prepared for the disbelievers. Footnote 45. The word fuel may be taken in a figurative sense, meaning that the punishment of hell is caused by idol worship. So the idols are like fuel for hellfire, being a means of bringing it into existence. Or, stones mean idols which the idolaters worship as gods. The idea being that the idolaters will be humiliated by witnessing that their gods were cast into the fire. Footnote 46. The words annas, men, and al-hijara, stones, may also be taken as indicating two classes of inmates of hell. Annas may denote those disbelievers who retain something of the love of God, and al-hijara, stones, those who have no love left for God in their hearts. Such men are indeed no better than stones. The word is plural of hajar, which means a stone, a rock, gold, and also one unequaled, i.e. big man, a leader. Lane.
Verse 26.
وَبَشِّرِ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ أَنَّ لَهُمْ جَنَّاتٍ تَجْرِي مِنْ تَحْتِهَا الْأَنْهَارُ كلما رزقوا منها من ثمرة رزقا قالوا هذا الذي رزقنا من قبل وأتوا به متشابها ولهم فيها أزواج مطهرة وهم فيها خالدون.
And give glad tidings to those who believe and do good works, that for them are gardens beneath which flow streams. Whenever they are given a portion of fruit therefrom, they will say, "This is what was given us before," and gifts mutually resembling shall be brought to them, and they will have therein pure mates, and therein will they abide. Footnote 46a. The Quran teaches that every created thing stands in need of a mate for its full development. In paradise, righteous men and women will have pure mates for perfecting their spiritual development and completing their happiness. What kind of mates these will be realized only in the hereafter. Footnote 47. This verse gives a brief description of the rewards which the believers will have in the next world. Critics of Islam have raised all sorts of objections to this description. The criticism is based upon a complete misunderstanding of the Islamic teaching about heavenly blessings. The Quran emphatically declares that it is beyond human mind to comprehend their nature. Chapter 32, verse 18. The Holy Prophet is reported to have said, "No eye has seen them, nor has any ear heard of them, nor can the mind of man conceive of them." Bukhari. The question naturally arises, why have the blessings of heaven been given the names used for material things in this world? This is because the address of the Quran is not merely to those people who are intellectually advanced. Therefore, it has used simple words which can be understood by all. While describing the heavenly blessings, the Quran has used the names of things generally looked upon as good in this world. And believers are told that they would get all these things in a better form in the next world. It is to bring out this important contrast that familiar words have been used. Otherwise, there is nothing common between the joys of this world and the blessings of the next. Moreover, according to Islam, the next life is not spiritual in the sense that it will just consist of a mental state only. Even in the next life, the human soul will have a kind of body, but that body will not be material. One can form some idea of this from the phenomenon of dreams. The scenes which a man witnesses in a dream cannot be called purely mental or spiritual, because in that state also he has a body and finds himself sometimes in gardens with streams and eats fruits and drinks milk. It is difficult to say that the contents of dreams are only mental states. The milk enjoyed in a dream is no doubt a real experience, but no one can say that it is the material milk found in this world which he drinks. The spiritual blessings of the next life will not be a mere subjective realization of the gifts of God which we enjoy in this world. What we have here is just a representation of the real and true gifts of God which man will find in the next world. Moreover, gardens represent faith and streams, good actions. Gardens cannot prosper without streams, nor can faith without good actions. Therefore, faith and actions are inseparable for the attainment of salvation. In the next world, gardens will remind the believers of their faith in this life, and streams will remind them of their good works. They will know, then, that their faith and good works have not gone in vain. It is wrong to conclude from the words, "This is what was given us before," that in heaven the believers will be given such fruits as they had enjoyed in this world, because, as already explained, the two are not identical. The fruits of the next world will, in fact, be the images of the quality of their own faith. When they will eat them, they will at once recognize and remember that they are the fruits of the faith they had in this world. And it will be out of gratitude for this that they will say, "This is what was given us before." This expression may also mean, "what was promised to us." The words "mutually resembling" refer to the resemblance between the acts of worship performed by believers in this world and the fruits thereof in heaven. The acts of worship performed in this life will appear to believers as fruits in the next. the more sincere and the more appropriate a man's worship, the more will he enjoy his portion of the fruits in paradise, and the better in quality will they be. It, therefore, lies in one's own power to improve the quality of one's fruits as one likes. The verse also signifies that the spiritual food for believers in heaven will be suited to the taste of each and every individual, and to his stage of progress and degree of spiritual development. The words, "they will abide," signify that the believers in heaven will not be subject to any change or decay. Man dies only when he cannot assimilate food or when someone kills him. But since the food of paradise will be perfectly suited to every individual, and since man will have pure and peaceful companions, death and decay will automatically disappear. The faithful will also have pure mates in heaven. A good wife is a joy and a comfort. The faithful try to have good wives in this world, and they will have good and virtuous mates in the next. Yet these joys of heaven are not physical. For a fuller description of the nature and reality of the blessings of paradise, see also chapters At-Tur, Ar-Rahman and Al-Waqi'ah.
Verse 27.
إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَسْتَحْيِي أَن يَضْرِبَ مَثَلًا مَا بَعُوضَةً فَمَا فَوْقَهَا فَأَمَّا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا فَيَعْلَمُونَ أَنَّهُ الْحَقُّ مِنْ رَبِّهِمْ وَأَمَّا الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا فَيَقُولُونَ مَاذَا أَرَادَ اللَّهُ بِهَذَا مَثَلًا يُضِلُّ بِهِ كَثِيرًا وَيَهْدِي بِهِ كَثِيرًا وَمَا يُضِلُّ بِهِ إِلَّا الْفَاسِقِينَ
Allah disdains not to give an illustration as small as a gnat, or even smaller. Those who believe know that it is the truth from their Lord, while those who disbelieve say, "What does Allah mean by such an illustration?" Many does He adjudge by it to be in error, and many by it does He guide, and none does He adjudge thereby to be in error except the disobedient. Footnote 48. Darabal Mathala means he gave an illustration or a description. He made a statement. He propounded a parable. Lane, Taj, and chapter 14, verse 46. Footnote 48a. God has described heaven and hell in the Quran in metaphors and similes. Metaphors and similes express depths of meaning which cannot adequately be expressed otherwise. And in things of the spirit, they provide perhaps the only method by which ideas can be properly conveyed. The words used for describing heaven may be as inadequate and insignificant as a gnat, which is considered by the Arabs and, in fact, is a very, very weak creature. The Arabs say, أَدْعَفُ مِنْ بَعُودَةٍ, i.e., he is weaker than a gnat. Nevertheless, they help to conjure up the picture. The believers know the words are only metaphorical and try to get to the depth of their meaning. But the disbelievers begin to find fault with them and increase in error and misguidance. Footnote 48b. Fawq means above and signifies both greater and smaller and is used in the sense which befits the context. Mufradat. Footnote 49. Adallallahu means, number 1, God adjudged him to be in error. Number 2, God forsook or abandoned him so that he went astray. Kashaf. Number 3, God found or left him in error or let him go astray. Lane.
Verse 28.
الذين ينقضون عهد الله من بعد ميثاقه ويقطعون ما أمر الله به أن يوصل ويفسدون في الأرض أولئك هم الخاسرون.
Who break the covenant of Allah after having established it, and cut asunder what Allah has bidden to be joined, and create disorder in the earth, it is these that are the losers.
Verse 29.
كيف تكفرون بالله وكنتم أمواتا فأحياكم ثُمَّ يُمِيتُكُمْ ثُمَّ يُحْيِيكُمْ ثُمَّ إِلَيْهِ تُرْجَعُونَ.
How can you disbelieve in Allah? You were without life, and He gave you life. And then will He cause you to die, then restore you to life. And then to Him shall you be made to return. Footnote 50. Amwat is the plural of mayyit, which means a thing dead or without life. Thus the word is used both for a thing which so far has had no life and also for a thing which had life but is now dead and defunct. The word is also used about one who is dying or is nearing death but has not yet died. Lane. Footnote 51. Hayat signifies number 1, the faculty of growth, number 2, of sensation, number 3, of intellect, number 4, freedom from grief or sorrow, number 5, everlasting life in the world to come, number 6, advantage or profit or a means thereof, or number 7, state of activity and power. Lane. Footnote 52. The verse points to the supreme truth that man's life does not end with the extinction and dissolution of his physical body, as it is pregnant with too big an import to end with the latter's decay and death. If life had no great purpose, God would not have created it, and after having created it, would not have made it subject to death unless there had been an afterlife. If death were the end of all life, then the creation of man would have been a mere sport and pastime. And this would have constituted a great reflection on the wisdom of God. The fact that God, the source of all wisdom and intelligence, has done all this shows that He has not created man to return to dust after a life of merely 60 or 70 years. On the contrary, He has created him for a better, fuller, and everlasting life, which he must live after he has shed the encumbrances of his physical tabernacle. Footnote 53. After death, the human soul does not go at once to heaven or hell. There is an intermediate state called barzakh, in which it is made to taste some of the good or bad results of its deeds, and resurrection, which will herald a full and complete requital, will take place later.
Verse 30.
هو الذي خلق لكم ما في الأرض جميعا ثم استوى إلى السماء فسواهن سبع سماوات وهو بكل شيء عليم.
He it is who created for you all that is in the earth. Then he turned towards the heavens, and he perfected them as seven heavens, and he has perfect knowledge of all things. Footnote 54. Istawa means he became firm or firmly settled. Istawa ila shay means he turned to a thing or he directed his attention to it. Lane. Footnote 55. Sawahu means he made it uniform or even, congruous or consistent in its several parts. He fashioned it in a suitable manner. He made it adapted to the exigencies or requirements of its case. He perfected it, or he put it into a right or good state. Lane. Footnote 56. In Arabic, 7 is generally used as a symbol of perfection, and the word along with 70 or 700 signifies a large number. All these three words have been used in this sense in the Quran. Chapter 90, verse 80, and chapter 15, verse 45. Elsewhere, the words 7 heavens have been substituted by 7 stages. Chapter 23, verse 18. Footnote 56a. The sun, the moon, and other heavenly bodies are of immense benefit to man. Modern science has made many discoveries in this connection, and many more may yet be made, all of which testify to the truth and comprehensiveness of the Quranic teaching. Science also continues to find more and more properties of things of this earth. Many things which were formerly thought to be useless are now known to be highly serviceable to man.